Hey everybody, Greg Conley here. I just want to add a quick note before this show starts. I just right now edited the podcast you're about to listen to together, and unfortunately, things got screwed up. Not too bad, but the big problem is that if you listen to this show without listening to this introduction, you'd think I was a giant jerk. Because it seems as if every single time Art answers a question, I interrupt him to ask another question. And while I indeed probably did that a few times, as is my nature, I didn't do it every time. So that is actually some weird problem that came up when recording the audio that I tried to solve, but unfortunately I did not have enough time nor the resources to really fix it up, which is truly a story of a B-movie, and so sorry about that, but this is one hell of an interview, including Art almost leaving me speechless at the end, and I want to thank him again, and thank you for listening, so hit the intro music and enjoy. Conley here with the 35th edition of the Your Video Store Shelf podcast. As I record this, it is Thursday, May 17th, and just yesterday, on May the 16th, the latest film from Art Camacho, Half Past Dead 2, starring former WCW and WWF wrestler Bill Goldberg and rapper Corrupt, hit stores. And Art Camacho is joining us on the show to promote that very film right now. And I need to correct myself. I lost track of my dates. It was actually Tuesday, May 15th, that the film came out, not the 16th. That was pretty bad. Nonetheless, it's out there, and let's hear a bit about it.
You know, Half Past Dead 2 was a really, I think what we tried to do with this one that was different from the first one was that we wanted to make it very gritty. Very gritty. And this one's a story about redemption with Goldberg and Corrupt. And it also is kind of a buddy film because it's really interesting, the chemistry that develops between Corrupt and Goldberg.
Half Past Ted 2 was produced by the very great Andrew Stevens, who we've had a lot of discussions on this show with the likes of Steve Latchall and Jim Wynorski. How did you get hooked up with Steve? Or, I mean, Andrew.
Andrew is an incredible guy. I got to give that guy credit. I mean, he started out doing these stuff. First off, as an actor. And then, producing these small little independent films. And then, at one point, he became one of the biggest producers in Hollywood. You know, producing, you know, Stallone and Snipes and name it, he's incredible. And with him, I first worked with him many years ago, probably in the early to mid-90s, when I was doing a lot of choreography with Don Wilson. And we did, I think it was Grid Runners. I don't know what the final title was, but we did a film called Grid Runners. And Andrew produced it, and obviously Don starred in it. And that was my first encounter with Andrew. And we did a couple films with him and Oshok. And then in 2001, I hadn't heard from him in probably like 4 or 5 years, and he called me up and said if I wanted to go to Germany for a few months to go do Half Past Dead. And I tell you, at first, it didn't sound appealing to me because I'm a family guy and I don't like traveling too much. But in the end, it sounded real intriguing because I was a big fan of Steven Seagal's and I thought this was a great opportunity to work with him. And that's what happened. I mean, we did Half Past Dead, and it must have done well enough for Sony for.
And plus, it's 2007, and everything's getting a sequel these days. So why not Half Past Dead 2? And they even fulfilled the. They even
exactly.
Matched it to the first one, where you have the big white guy who can kick your ass, and then the street talking black guy. So it works.
There you go. That's Half Past.
And I actually just got the chance to watch the film this afternoon, and it was a fun one.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Thank you very much. You know, I gotta tell you, man, it was such a pleasure working with both of those guys. Obviously, Bill Goldberg being an athlete and stuff like that, we related a lot to a lot of the same things. And then Korop, again, very, very professional. I was very pleasantly surprised. I mean, we were doing a lot of dialogue changes on the spot, and that guy was just getting it every time, the nuances. And you know, because his performance was the most complex because he had to bring some comedic value, but yet, you know, when it came to the dramatic stuff, he had to really nail it, and I felt he did it.
Do you think that you started directing 10, 12, 13 years ago by now, and how much do you think that you've managed to grasp the dramatics of film since then?
You know, at first, when I directed my first feature called The Power Within, that was in 1994, and at that point, you know, when I was directing, it was more of a technical thing, you know, trying to get the shots in, trying to make your days, and you know, trying to tell a story within that context. And then as I started doing more and more features, especially in probably about 2000 is when I started, 99, 2000 when I started actually producing and writing some of these films, I really wanted to get more emotionally attached to the characters, to the films, and really got more into the storytelling and left more of the technical thing to my DPs and some of the people around me. And I think in that respect I've grown a lot, matured a lot, because I really, you know, I'm more about the story and the characters than I am about the action. And, you know, I've done hundreds and hundreds of fights and action films and stuff like that, but I really, really get more of a high now when I get...
Yeah, I failed to mention that. Oh, I was going to say, I failed to mention that when I made the introduction to the show, that you were not just some guy that went to film school and lucked his way into a directing job for Half Past Dead 2. You got your start, you were telling me last night. Actually, let's just hear about that, because it's a tremendous story.
Yeah, no, I was, you know, I've done martial arts since I was about 15, 16 years old, and I got into it because I was, you know, growing up in gangs and stuff like that, so I needed an edge. So, you know, I got my butt kicked by rival gangs and stuff like that, and then I thought, man, I need to do something. I might not be able to beat up five guys, I'm taking one of them down with me. You know, and then out of the blue, after several years, one of my instructors, Sifu Eric Lee, he calls me up and says, "Hey, Art, how about you want to get your butt kicked in a movie?" And in my head, I'm thinking, I get my butt kicked every night by you for free, and they're going to pay me? Shoot, I'm there. And that's how it started. I started doing stunts and films, and at the same time, I started delving into acting, a lot of little, you know, little independent films and stuff like that, and starring in a couple of small ones. And from then on... I, you know, fortunately I was very, you know, such a big fan of the genre that I did very well, and so I started doing several films as you know, the stunt guy, an actor, a one-liner here, doing a lot of fights and stuff, and PM Entertainment was a company that I got hooked up with, and I was so blessed, because during this period of time was when the kickboxing films were really, really hot, and so they were doing so many films, so they were hiring me for all these movies. And out of the blue one day, they said, "Hey, do you want to, you know, one of the directors with them asked me if I wanted to choreograph his movies." And I thought, cool, you know. At first, I thought, you know, I didn't know what the hell choreography was. I'm thinking, you know, dancing and stuff like that. So I said, I'm going to do, you know, West Side Story here, you know. And then I started to understand, you know, that you know, that it's all about rhythm and it's about music, and it really is, to be honest with you. I mean, one of the things I still give stunt fighting seminars, and one of the biggest things for all these tough macho guys that come in there, that screen fighting has more to do with music and dance and rhythm than it does with fighting, because you're just dancing. You're Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire out there. And anyway, so let me get back to this. What happened is that I did, you know, the director was very happy and the producers were very happy. So then I became PM's guy, you know, PM's fight choreographer. So every film, anytime they had a fight, they would call Art Camacho up. And then what I started doing was bringing my team of people with me who, I mean, I would train from scratch. I've trained hundreds of people, you know, put hundreds of people in films and trained them from scratch to screen fight. And after like, you know, 30, 40 films, out of the blue, I had an experience where I was getting doing a film called I think it ended up being called Magic Kid, and Justin Murphy, who's one of the owners of PM Entertainment, asked me to bring some of my friends down for this tournament scene. So we went out in the morning, and at first he asked me for maybe 20, 30 guys, and I thought, no problem. By the end of the day, he wanted like 600 people, you know, for free or next to nothing. And I made that commitment. I said, you know what, I'll do it. And so what happened was that I didn't know how, you know, how I was going to get 600 friends of mine to come down for free and hang out. So I started making them calls, and fortunately people have heard of me, and so literally that day we ended up getting them close to 1,000 people. And a friend of mine who was ADing for him at the time said, Art, you know what? Your friends are going to be here. You don't want them to be here all day, and you know, come up with a plan of what we can do with all these bodies. And so I was stressed, and so I came out with this, I mean, I'm telling you, man, 4 or 5 pages of camera directions and this and that and the other thing, and when I showed it to Joseph, we were at a meeting, because he was also directing the film, he kind of smirked a little, kind of laughed. And I thought he was laughing at me, and I'm a proud Mexican man. I go, nobody laughs at me. Don't pay me. Just don't laugh at me. You know, and so I walked out of the office. I mean, I went out of the meeting, it was over. And then Joseph came up to me, and he looked at me, and I was, you know, inside. I kept my hostility inside, but he asked me, he goes, Art, do you want to direct films? And I thought he was just, you know, just BSing. And so I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to. And the week after, I got a deposit, and there you go, I became a film director, you know. And then my first film, like, so we were going back and forth on what the topic would be, and it would have to incorporate some of my skills, obviously. But I didn't just want to be the karate guy. So we kind of found a compromise project called The Power Within, which was a little bit of a Karate Kid-ish kind of thing, but more mystical and more delving into some of the philosophies that I have in martial arts. And that was it. That was the first film that I did. And I tell you, man, the first day, and I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but the first day when you're there on the set and you're calling the shots, my God, you talk about stress. You talk about stress. And with PM Entertainment, they had this formula down pat. I mean, Concord, all those guys have the formula down pat. And so you normally don't do more than a few takes per shot. But my first day, we were at Griffith Park, we had a Steadicam, and we're up there doing the first shot of the movie, and I tell you, man, it was like, take number 5, take number 6, I'm sweating bullets. I said, I'm going to be fired my first day, that's the end of my career. And finally, after we got the first shot off and it came out so beautiful, then it's like, okay, you get into your groove. And that's what I was telling you. At first, it was very technical. I was trying to be very, very, you know, transitions and just cute camera moves and stuff like that. And that was the focus a lot more than performances. And fortunately, the film did well and it came out well. But you know, obviously, as I grew, I wanted to get more.
And we had Richard Munchkin on the show just a couple days ago. Your good friend from way back when, and he expressed the same kind of fear, utter fear, when he was traveling to Vegas to direct Dance or Die, his first film that we talked about in the show, and all of a sudden he realized that he was in charge of directing a movie, right, and he had no idea what to do.
Exactly. And I gotta tell you, and I gotta confess, after every film I do, whether it's choreographing, whether it's directing, or writing, whatever, every time I finish, it's like, phew, you know. I haven't found out that I don't know what the heck I'm doing. You know, I'm serious, man. I pulled one over on them. But Munchkin is one of my, you know, one of my biggest inspirations. I've seen that guy, and whether he's stressed out or whatever, the guy is the calmest person on the set. You never see the guy squint. You never see him do anything. He just has that air of confidence.
That's the impression that I've gotten from him in the past. You got to be calm when you're a professional gambler. Never thought about that until now.
Exactly. You've got that poker face thing going on, man, and everyone could be all in chaos and the world falling apart, but Munchkin is so cool.
And did you meet Don Dragon Wilson during your time at PM Entertainment, or were you friends with him prior to that?
You know, I met him shortly before I started working with PM Entertainment, because my instructor, again, was good friends with him and his manager at the time, Paul Maslach. and he started choreographing for him. So I met him first. I think it was, I was going to be the non-union fighter on one of his first films with Concord. I think it was Blood Fist 2 or 3. I think Blood Fist 3. So I had met him then, but I was a fan. I was a fan because he's a, you know, tremendous athlete. And then being at his house and stuff like that, and it's like, wow, this is cool. This is Don the Dragon Wilson, you know? And then my working with him was almost, you know, one of those things that's destined to be because, like I told you, Eric Lee was his choreographer. And so he got me to work with him on several of these films, Ring of Fire and then several other films. And then it just so happened that he had a film coming up, and Eric Lee had to go to Canada, had already booked a film in Canada. So his manager asked me, he says, you want to work with Don? And I thought, my God, of course. And that was it. That was it. It was kind of, feeling each other out that first film, you know, kind of getting the groove. And the thing about Don, which helped me a lot and helped both of us a lot in our working together, is that, as a martial artist, I'm very, you know, defense oriented as a more of a fighting kind of, art. It wasn't until after years of training that I started getting more into the flashy, you know, the what they call katas or the forms. And so I don't have the flashiest of flashy techniques, but I have a lot of power in my techniques, and I'm limited. I have a terrible left leg, and so it is done. So I started using, and I used to box, and so I started using a lot of, you know, my own limitations and strengths to choreograph physically for a lot of Don's movement, because it's very similar. But of course, he's a real McCoy, real fighter. And so it started working. And so that's what happened, is that him and I started really gelling a lot. And God, I mean, we've done close to, I'd say about 25, 26 films together. You know, I've directed him.
There was a time there where it seemed like Don never stopped.
No, that guy was just cooking. At one point, I remember Entertainment Tonight noted that one, you know, that was the good and bad of it, was at one point he had 5 releases. In 1 year, he was in such demand. Like I told you, during the mid '90s, kickboxing was all the rage. And as I told you yesterday, is that the unfortunate thing was that there was such a need, such a demand for it, that everybody and their mother started, you know, doing Ring of Fire and doing this, doing that, doing these films, and the quality started dropping because a lot of you guys didn't know what the heck they were doing. And so then the bottom dropped out. You know. It's kind of the mid to late '90s is when the whole bottom dropped out of that kickboxing phase of filmmaking, and so, you know, obviously most of these companies went under, and most of these fly-by nights, you know, went under, and then you separate the men from the boys. Then it became more, you know, let's you know, get good films out there. It's still a little that way where you get a lot of, you know, mediocre films out there, but there's much, much better quality films now than there was, you know, then. Because, you know, people are, the buyers around the world, because these films are bigger in other countries than they are here in the U.S. But so you have to have, you know, better quality.
Yeah, there was even a company, I have a big stock of films, old martial arts films from the 90s direct-to-video boom that I never got the chance to watch, and there was a company, CineXL, not Cinetel, but CineXL, they operated out of the Northeast. And they would take, I think they pretty much created the career of Gary Daniels in some ways. And their stuff was usually like the American Shoot Fighter 1 and 2, and they were usually the bottom of the market.
Yeah.
And they contributed to some of that.
Gary Tan, I remember. They did. Well, you know, Gary Tan, I remember his first films. I mean, but he stood out. That's the thing. I mean, he stood out, and that's why he had a bigger, he was much bigger overseas than he was here. I mean, but, you know, but he definitely stood out in his first film. I remember it was a small film, friends of mine were putting it together. I forgot the name of it. But they had told me about this guy, Gary Daniels, and that's how I met him, and, actually, I ended up directing him in one of my big action ones.
Yeah, you know, I've mentioned earlier that, or on the phone yesterday, that Recoil is seen by many as one of the best films from PM Entertainment.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Thank you. You know, the funny thing is, really quick, not to get off of tangents, but I do that, so just cut me off.
Go right ahead.
I'm doing it too much, but that film came about almost accidentally. I had been at PM one day, and Joseph had wanted to find another project for me. And so he, you know, he, in passing between meetings, he says, "Hey, Art, you know what? Let's do another. So just come up with some stories and stuff like that, and we'll kick it around. So we'll meet next week at, you know, X time." And so, okay, great. I said, fantastic. So I thought, hey, I'm bitching. I'm going to do another film with Joseph. And to be honest with you, I forgot completely about it. One day I woke up, and I'm thinking, what was it? There was something I had to do today. I swear to God, I was just kicking around. Oh, damn it, I got a meeting. So I jumped in the shower, and I was supposed to have, like, treatments and everything ready. And I'm driving. I mean, I'm brushing my teeth, because I'm driving to Joseph's office. It takes me, like, 45 minutes to get there at the time. And I'm thinking, okay, there's a guy, and there's a gun. And I'm thinking of, what am I going to pitch? You know, this is a guy that he's expecting a treatment. He's expecting a story. And so within the 45 minutes it took me to get there, I came up with a story for Recoil. And what we did, we just, you know, at the time, it was shortly after that, I don't know if you remember, there was a big robbery called, you know, at Bank of America, where two guys with all these, you know, bulletproof vests and guns held LAPD.
There was a Michael Madsen movie about it.
And so we did that, but times 10. This is PM, so we're going to have no two guys. That's for sissies. We had like six or eight guys. Not only did we have guns, we had a big motorcycle chase. I mean, it is, I clocked it. It's about 19 minutes, the opening action sequence. From the inside of the bank robbery to the finale, and we blew up so many cars. It really was, for me, it was just breathtaking, because in those days you didn't have CGI. I just saw the trailer to the new Die Hard one, and you know, 99.9% of it is all CGI. But in those days, you know, it's real cars and real people getting hurt, you know? And there's such a, I don't know about you, but I mean, to me, there's still, maybe because I'm biased, but there's still such a rush for me when I see the real thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. CGI. Without a doubt. I'm doing, as the listeners surely know, I am working on a comprehensive history of PM Entertainment. And that's why we had Munch on the show. And the reason for that is that their films hold up. The action scenes for their time were comparable to Hollywood, and that's part of what made PM so successful.
Those guys, I mean, Rick and Joe, you know, it was one of those things that the chemistry was there. Like I told you, their personalities were so different. You know, Rick was the more technical of the two, and Joe was the more he shoots from the hip kind of thing. And that's what I told you. I mean, he that's the way he was. If you look at their difference in films that Joe directed, Rick was into sci-fi and very, you know, high-tech for that time, and Joe was into more gritty kind of dramas that had action. But the action quotient, I'm telling you, man. And then George, who was their head of distribution, when he came up with the idea for L.A. Heat, I mean, that's brilliant. You had enough stuff footage there for stock footage, so why not use it? You know, and that's when they came up with L.A. Heat. So when I directed one of those episodes.
And, you know, I forget who it is that now owns the PM library, but the fact that they haven't began to sell the already used stock footage from the PM movies to some other company is surprising, and I imagine that within a couple years there will be some action films where you get to see a truck blow up from Recoil.
They were huge. Yeah, I'll tell you, they were huge stunts. Huge. I mean, even by today's standards, when I see all the independent films and the stuff that PM got away with did in those days. Again, in conversations with Munch or Jerry Jacobs and some of the old crew, I mean, you could not do that today on those budgets. You could not.
And before we move on from the PM days, since there's so much more to talk about, let's you mentioned that you were on the set of Joseph Merhi's newest film, the non-action film Oranges, correct? Yeah, and you said it was like sort of like a PM reunion.
Yeah, yeah. It was seeing all the you know, Jerry Jacobs was his AD and he had some of the old crew there. It was amazing. And to see Joseph, I mean, he was happy as anything, man, to be back in the directing seat. Cause that's his passion, man. and then for him to do oranges, it's from what I understand, I haven't seen the film, but I've seen some clips, and it looks incredible. It's a drama. It's really, really incredible. And it was just such a pleasure for me, because again, I owe my career to him. I'm not talking about directly, I'm talking about his company gave me my first SAG card, He gave me my first choreography gig. You know, he made me a director. And then he came up with, you know, again, I think I wrote two or three stories that were produced by his company, you know. I owe those people so much. It's incredible. And just to see him back in the saddle.
And once PM kind of began to fall apart, sadly, you went on and started directing on your own. So what were some of those projects that you led to?
I was very, very blessed because like I told you yesterday, is that just the mere fact that I was affiliated with PM as a director, different producers started wanting me to take whatever formula that PM had to them. So I started directing films for different people. And a few of them, I mean, like, for instance, I worked with this company, Dominion Entertainment, with Dave DeFalco, a strange cat, but, the guy, you know, say what you want of the guy, but his ideas, the thing is, he had great story ideas, and he had his pulse on it, but beyond that, he couldn't, you know, the scripts were very, very, you know, weak, to say the least. But one of the first films I did with him was, like, Point Doom, which again, I told you yesterday that Point Doom was a great concept that we were developing, but the people who really made it work were Andrew Dice Clay and Richard Grieco, because they really, really got into it every day. We'd go into their trailer and I'd say, these are the scenes we're shooting. We'd kind of discuss the generalities. I'd leave, set up my shots, and leave them in that trailer locked in until they worked out the scene, and so they'd come out, and my God, they'd come out with fantastic stuff.
And I have expressed my love for Point Doom in the past, and the fact that Point Doom kind of represented one of the last throws for the good old 90s, let's get together, let's get five B, C movie actors together, and throw all five faces on the cover, and we'll sell copies. Today, it's moved more to the, let's get one sort of established name, so we can throw his name on the cover. And sadly, the collaboration of Richard Grieco, Andrew Dice Clay, and Angie Everhart, those films don't get made anymore.
No. You know, and I'll tell you that Angie, she was really, you know, kind of at a peak then in the late 90s. And the reason she took the part was because she wanted to play a very toned-down character. She refused to put makeup on. She wanted to grubbiest of clothes and, you know, and then very, very, you know, non-glamorous, the opposite of what she was, you know. And she was such a sweet person to work with, you know, because I've worked with so many people, and some of these people, I mean, they, you know, they're not too cool to work with, but Angie was almost like a tomboy. I mean, she was so cool to work with on the set. All those guys, from Grieco to Dice, and, you know, I've been very blessed for the most part, because most of these people that I've worked with.
That's another thing you mentioned last night, how I think you gave the figure of 90% of the people that you work with tend to be cool. When you got into the business, did you expect that you were going to be dealing with, for lack of a better term, a bunch of Hollywood jackoffs?
No. No, I really didn't. I really, like I told you, when I got into the business, it was just, you know, number one, initially just, hey, this is fun and kind of a little side gig. I never really, even though deep inside, you know, I always had a love for the stuff and I had a passion. I wanted to do films, but I always thought it would be as an actor or doing stunts and stuff like that. And I never set out to be, you know, a film director. Because I thought, to be honest with you, I used to hold directors up on the highest of high pedestals. It's like, my God, how do these guys think of those things? How can they do this? And you know, and then when I started working in the business, started seeing these guys, I thought, Jesus Christ, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Look at that. That's your shot. You know, because I would work, you know, I purposely, I remember way back when, for about a year, I did extra work because I wanted to just be on a set. And I worked on a lot of these films and just seeing how these directors worked. And I started, you know, demystifying the directing aspects. Because, I mean, it would take these guys so many takes, and I'm thinking, you got it already, move on, you know? And then, to get back to your question, I really, you know, never even thought about it. But then when I started working with some of these people that I grew, you know, I used to watch Don Wilson as a fighter and then seeing some of his early films, and Seagal and Richard Grieco way back when, you know, on TV and stuff. It was such a high for me. It still is. I'm still, half the time, like when I just did a film with Herman Asante. My God, that guy was incredible. I really, sometimes it's hard for me to stay, you know, calm and cool, be this director when it's like, wow, you're a big fan of this stuff.
I can imagine that, definitely. Because, as I said, Herman Asante, his latest films, they should be giving a rebirth to his career, and I hope they do.
Yeah, that guy is just an incredible talent. And James Russo, my God, you know. I did the first one, I think, was Redemption. I did a film called Redemption with Don Wilson and Chris Penn. And Russo, macho, come here. Here's what I see. And he was such a collaborative actor and very intense. And just,
yeah, what I love about Jim is that I gave him a call about 2 years ago. He was possibly going to do an interview with the site, and he agreed to it. But my own laziness led to that not happening. But... I was talking to Jim, and after we got the formalities out of the way, I'm like, yeah, I definitely want to do the interview. Just, I want to grab a couple of your old films that we'll talk about, like, and I named one film, and Jim just goes, oh, that film's a piece of shit. And just he is a tremendous actor, too. Like, just watching him, he did a film in the 80s called Extremities, where he was a rapist. I think it was Goldie Hawn, maybe, but I'm probably wrong on that one. And it was, yeah, Farrah Fawcett. Yeah, that's it. And that was a one hell of a performance from Jim.
Oh, yeah. He's an intense actor, and he really, you know, all these guys have been very blessed. Even this other actor, you know, again, old-timer, John Savage, who just, you know, incredible actors. And that's the thing, man. That's the thing that I've been very blessed is that, whenever, you know, most of these films, my biggest criticism on any film is making sure, you know, that they tell stories. When I'm watching, even right now as we're talking, I have the I'm watching Half Past Dead 2, and just seeing the shots and seeing the edits and stuff. I'm very self-critical of my stuff, so it takes me a while. It takes me about a year to like my movies, you know. But when I see performances, bad performances, man, does that hurt me. And that's why whenever we do these films, I try to get, you know, you try. You hope and pray that you try to get the best actors for the role so you're not having to teach them how to act. Because I've been in those situations where some of the lesser parts have gone to some actors that aren't as strong, and you're like, oh, my God, pulling teeth. You know, I recently worked with Flavor Flav, and this guy, he wasn't an actor, but what he did, which I thought was incredible, is that he was always trying to, you know, learn his lines and stuff like that. So when you see the scenes when he's not saying his lines, he's actually so into it that he's actually listening. You know, you see his eyes, you see his movement, you see. So his performance.
And on what movie did you work with Flava Flav? Because I got to look out for that one.
It should be out hopefully later this year.
Oh, okay.
Of a Fit Fighter. And that one was that's the one where we had Armand, we had Flava Flav, you know, John Savage, and you know, we got this Ultimate Fighter who's actually fighting next week, Rampage, in there. And Flav, like I told you, he took it as a challenge because he's never done any acting, you know, apart from his videos and stuff like that. And so we put him in there, and the guy, good presence. Like I told you, it was hard for him because, you know, learning all his dialogue and stuff like that. So that was the biggest challenge there. But when he's listening, that's the hardest thing to do. Just listen and not do anything. You know, a lot of people when they're acting, they're always trying to do something, trying to, you know, occupy their time while somebody else is talking. But this guy was actually listening for his cue, but it comes across so intense. You know,
and why has Confessions of a Pit Fighter taken so long to get out there? Because when I picked up that film Pit Fighter, which was directed by Jesse Johnson, I thought it was your movie, and I was pissed.
What happened is when we did Confessions, we shot it, and then there was a lot of problems in the post-production process of it, you know, and then we had to re-edit out scenes because there was rights issues, because we had some songs in there that that somebody didn't do enough due diligence, unfortunately. And so we had to re-edit it after it was edited. And then we had some post-sound issues. It was really a challenging experience because, you know, sometimes you do that. Sometimes you take chances, and I've always taken chances on companies and people, and 80-90% of the time it pays off. And it's that 10% that kills you. that's what Confessions, to be honest with you, to me has a lot of good things in it. It's a story that I wrote years ago, and I was going to do it myself. I said, you know what? I'm not going to take the bull by the horns. I'm going to get $50,000, go shoot it in Tijuana, Mexico, and star in it. And I was literally going to, my whole goal for that one was to create a buzz. I was physically going to take three of my guys down there with me with a high-end camera, a digital camera, and stage real fights. The key was what I was going to do, and I had everything planned. Everything said, everybody told me, what are you, crazy? What are you, stupid? I go, no. Here's what we're going to do. I have two big guys who are really tough, badass guys. And I was going to take them down there with me, and I was going to stage these real pit fights out there in alleyways and shit like that with real guys, real fights. And I said, the only caveat is that 15 seconds, no matter what. If I get my ass kicked, kick his ass, all I need is 15 seconds. I was going to start staging these fights and start putting them on the internet to promote Pit Fighter, my professional Pit Fighter. Thank the Lord the production company came in and took it from me. Thank God, because in retrospect, I'm thinking, what are you, crazy? But I was really going to do that. I was setting up.
Especially now that you let people know that you got a bad left leg.
Exactly. Now they'll go from my left side. But I'm serious. I was going to do it. That it was going to be a small film because it was basically, you know, it was based loosely on experience between me and my brother who just has been in and out of prison for years and stuff like that and can never get his life together. And so that's what I infused. I infused a lot of the barrio, a lot of the stuff that I grew up with, you know, into that film. And that's why it was a very personal film for me. And it still, I mean, it stands out. It's not dated. And what we did, we actually, one night, I took one of the biggest risks I've ever taken, is I had a bunch of homeboy friends of mine, and we actually went into the heart. I mean, I'm talking about one of the grittiest parts in East LA, and shot a big fight. And we had a lot of real homeboys. And so it just so happened that there was a truce going on. So we had like four or five gangs there. Lowrider gangs, homeboys, all kinds of people just represented as part of our audience watching these fights. And you know, people, you know, tend to drink a little, smoke a little pot, and I didn't mind. As long as they're having a good time, as long as nobody's killing each other, I'm a happy camper. You know, and it just so happened that by accident, one of the bikers, revving his bike up, hit one of the lowrider cars. And oh my, and for like 30 seconds, all of a sudden you see guns come out, you see crowds, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. Just keep the camera rolling. And literally for, you know, it literally could have broken out. It could have broken the truce, basically. Art Camacho was going to be responsible for breaking this truce in East L.A. And then I had my boy, Aldo Gonzalez, who really pulled it all together for me. He went in there, kind of calmed him down. Then I went in there, and I said, you know, guys, I'm, you know, I'll pay whatever. I mean, I'm responsible. You guys were trying to do something righteous here. And in a couple of minutes, everything just kind of, you know, went calm, and we continued having a great night. But, I mean, this place was so bad that I remember there was cops driving by, but they'd drive by like 2-3 blocks down the way. You'd see them, but nobody would come by. Nobody. I mean, no cops, no nothing, man. When they saw these gangbangers there, and you know, nobody would come by. So if anything happened...
That would have been the end of Art Camacho. And Confessions of a Pit Fighter would have been locked away forever.
Exactly. You know, but yeah, that's what happened. A lot of technical problems, but it's one of them. I'll be honest with you. I mean, in the end, I mean, there's some scenes that are really strong in there. I mean, I really put my all into it because I wrote, you know, I co-wrote the script and I wrote the story. I co-produced the film. And again, right now, last I heard is everything technically has been taken care of and, you know, bingo. We're hopefully, God willing, by the end of this year will be, because it was at AFM last year and there was such a good response for it. You know, because we did, and as a matter of fact, what I did different in that one that I've done in any of the film is I had a music video editor edit the movie. I said, you know what, give it your taste, give it your flavor. Let me show me something different. I'm always wanting to learn, and we did. We gave it that Guy Ritchie kind of feel to some of the scenes, man. It really.
And I'm going to put you on the spot here, since Jesse Johnson's Pit Fighter has already been out there. I would think that they're going to have to change the Confessions of a Pit Fighter title, whoever the distributor is, What's your idea for the retitle?
I'm not sure. I never even gave it any thought. Something to do with fighting, something to do with East L.A., something to do with redemption. Because that's basically what it's all about. And like Jesse Johnson's Pit Fighter was kind of a throwback to the early 90s films that we were doing. You know, his was that kind of thing. I thought it was well done, and obviously it did phenomenal numbers. And that's why these guys wanted the Confessions of Pitfire, because I had so many titles for it, and when I came up with this one, that's why I wanted to make it more, you know, different. It's still pit fighting or whatever you want to call that stuff, but no, man, I think God willing, I think it's going to do well. It has so many good elements, and it's so different than the other pit fight. The only resemblance is these guys are fighting, and there's pit fighter in the title. You know, but I really used a lot of homeboys and went to East L.A. and tried to get the flavor, you know?
And on the subject of fighting, you are in, was it Missouri right now, prepping to do second unit work on a film about MMA, or am I wrong?
Actually, it was postponed. But we're gonna shoot it on the 26th on June. I'm gonna be I was training the actor, and then the actor fell through, so they're getting another actor for me. So I'm gonna train him and do all the choreography and stuff like that, and MMA. And you know, the challenge in this one is that the director wants to really get as real as possible. So that's very challenging because if you're a fan or if you've seen these fights, generally, cinematically, they're boring. I mean, you have a couple of spurts of guys beating the heck out of each other, but most of the time when they're choking down and stuff like mm-hmm. that, it's not very cinematic. So the challenge for me is to keep it as real as possible with real techniques, but dramatizing it for the cinema, you know? And it's really interesting. I'm very excited about it because, you know, most of the time it's pretty much it's carte blanche and let's create a fight for the sake of fighting. Well, like when we did all the gang fights in Half Past Dead 2. Let's just go to town and let's just fight, just mess people up, you know, and then I'll capture it, you know. And this one is going to be, I'm really, you know, the attention to detail the director is giving it, it's really, really, really interesting, very strong. I'm very, very excited, kind of rejuvenated because I think the last film I choreographed was, worked on choreography was Half Past Dead 2 or Half Past Dead 1 before that. I've been, you know, directing primarily the last several years. So this kind of, you know, gets me back into that kind of shape, you know, because I don't train as much as I
like. I'm sure you can still kick my ass.
Oh, are you kidding me, buddy? On cinema, yes. In the film, yes. So I tell everybody, in film I could beat the heck out of you. In the street, well, that's another story. You know, I tell you, the first time I started training, I started throwing punches again and kicks. My body was like, what are you doing?
You took quite the beating in Half Past Dead 2, and even in Half Past Dead 1, you got to be a character in those films. Let's hear about them.
Yeah, you know what's funny? In Half Past Dead 1, I had no intention. There was no discussion of me doing anything on it, because I was happy that way. I just wanted to be behind the camera because it was my first big studio film, and I thought, you know what? I just want to learn. I want to see. I want to contribute as much as I can, but I want to, you know, focus on the film. And then it just so happened that the stunt guy they had in mind, or the person they had in mind, ended up getting his nose busted, or his whole jaw, or his face busted, whatever. Unfortunately, in another film, and so they pulled me in at the last minute, and so I ended up playing this character, 49 or 11, I think it was. And in Half Past Dead 2, it was a thing where Andrew really, really stuck me into. He says, "You know what, Art? We I've been looking at the script. We need a fight because it was going to be just a shootout between two guards and Bill Goldberg." And we need a fight, we need something, and I'm thinking, you know, Andrew, be real, I'm 165 pounds at my heaviest, and 5'8", and Goldberg is Goldberg. How realistic is that? And he goes, no, you can do it, and that's when I came up with the concept of, you know, these guards have batons, so that would be the equalizer. And I'm pretty experienced at, you know, scream and stuff like that. And so we did. So I talked to Bill, and he was really up for it. He was game. He really, you know, him and I, like I told you, we became good friends. And so we did. We put this fight together. And since, you know, I tell you, the first couple of takes, it was kind of, you know, methodical, slow. We went through the motions, and we were doing it. It was still looking good. But by take 5, 6, 7, my God, we were just getting into it, man. It became so, I mean, we kept amping it up higher and higher and higher and higher. And I tell you, man, the next day, my whole forearms, both forearms were just massive bruises. And his forearms were bruises, and then, because I kicked him a few times, and his back was bruised, and we were both, I mean, it was funny, because I thought, you know, I was going to act like the macho part, like nothing hurt me. But then when I walk up to him, and he says, man, I had to take Advil and just crashed. I'm thinking, me too! You know, so we were both, but it was such a fun thing to do, with, especially Goldberg, because as big and strong and quick as he is, he's so precise. And even with me, when I was getting into it, like I told you, I haven't done this in years to that degree, and my instincts were kicking in. So even if there was something that came close to me, I would just split second moving out of the way. And if you know, again, anybody who works with sticks, you'll know, I mean, I was just countering for every one hit. I was throwing 15 hits, you know. That'd be the only way, even realistically, to fight against a big guy. You know, use my speed and stuff like that and get the heck out of the way, man, because if he lands those things, I'm...
Yeah, and especially with Goldberg, because he was in the wrestling business, and in the wrestling business, you had to go 250 nights a year and try not to hurt yourself nor your opponent. So it would seem like he was in a good position in that movie.
Oh, he was great. He was great, and he contributed so much to his own actions. So I told him, I said, you know what, we don't have... You know, the budget or the time or it's not that kind of movie like the first one. But the first one was more Michael Bay-ish, big, over-the-top, stylish, which the director wanted. And this one, we just wanted to make gritty. Let's be real. We got Goldberg. We're not going to have Goldberg on cables and doing all these flips and stuff like that. Let's do, as a matter of fact, even in one sequence where he uses his, I forgot what he calls it, but when he tackles the guy, it's real. It's real. I mean, it's real. We obviously we put some pads down. We just went at the guy, and my God, when you're there, especially when you see it in person, it is so impressive to see that. You know, see, because again, and Goldberg is a tremendous, tremendous athlete, man, but very precise, very, very precise in what he does. So nobody ever got hurt as much fighting as we did. You saw even in the gang fights. I mean, I had so much control, and everything was so carefully plotted out. There was no injuries.
Impressive. So let's get the final plugs out there for Half Past Dead 2 now that we're nearing the end of the show. Tell the people to go rent the movie.
I think Half Past Dead 2, if you're a fan of either Goldberg's or you know, Half Past Dead 1, I think you're going to really enjoy this. This is just a roller coaster ride of action. And it's a story. Down, you know, deep inside is a story about redemption. And you'll see a lot of character, you know, coming from Goldberg and Corrupt, but it's a roller coaster ride. I mean, even when I'm sitting watching it right now, it doesn't feel small. It just feels fast. I mean, you know how some movies you get some very slow moments and you're like, okay, come on, let's speed it up for the action. And this one doesn't feel that way. It feels actually pretty good. The pacing of it is really good. And that's one thing that I give, you know, Andrew a lot of credit for. I give the editors. I mean, anytime you do these films, even though on paper I'm the director, it's a team effort. It's everyone pulling together from the producers, actors, and everybody making this thing happen. And I think it's well worth the rent or the buy.
And I come from the low attention span generation, so it usually will take me, I'll usually pause a movie a few times to finish something up or make a phone call or whatever. And for Half Past Dead 2, I think I only hit the pause once. So that, if anything, ringing endorsement from Greg Conley.
I tell you, Greg, that's going to be your, you know, like they have the 3-star, the thumbs up.
Yeah, there we go. There's a new system. I did get rid of number ratings a while back. Might be time to reinstitute something else, but
exactly.
There we go. I have a meeting that I need to get to in about 20 minutes, so sadly, we have to end this now. But, Art, we discussed this last night. I now have you on my little list of people who I can give a call to just in case that a guest kind of jumps out on me and doesn't decide to do the show at the last minute. So, eventually... We'll get you back on the show. Confessions of a Pit Fighter, that'll be out there soon. And, of course, Half Past Dead 2, available to buy and rent right now from Sony, indeed. So
Yes, and Greg, just let me say this in closing is that I really, really, I mean, looking you up and stuff like that, I have all the respect in the world for what you're doing, man. God bless you. You're just phenomenal, and I'm, you know, so happy for your success and your passion, and man, thank you so very much. It's been, I tell you, man, I've done a lot of interviews and stuff like that, but this has been truly, truly an honor to be conversing with you.
You know how to make a man feel wanted, Art.
No, it's true. It's true. I'm not, believe me, I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's butt. Anybody?
Oh, there we go. That'll go on the tombstone. Art, thank you for that. And thank you for joining us on the Your Video Store Shelf podcast. Half Past Ted 2. It's out there. Go rent it. Greg Conley.
Bye,
man. Have a good night, guys. See ya. Yeah.